Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 121. My name is John. Well, it's 10 years later, and still, I haven't a clue. This podcast debuted on March 15th, 2010. That makes the date of the publication of this episode the 10-year anniversary, March 15th, 2020. I keep forgetting the podcast's anniversary is the Ides of March. It almost makes me want to break my streak of using song lyrics as my opening quote and use something from Julius Caesar. But given it's the 10th anniversary, I can't think of a better song lyric to quote than something from my favorite band, Collective Soul. Well, it's 10 years later. In these 10 years, I know of only one person who has ever listened to an episode. Specifically, Raging Rhino number 74, The Dawn of Rhino, where I talked about Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. The listener tweeted his interest in the opening story from that episode of my first comic book, Flash number 275. So, thank you, Christian Blatt, for the mention. If anybody else has listened, thanks. I'm sure there's a counter somewhere on my website of the number of times the podcast has been played or downloaded. Hell, if I counted spam messages, this podcast would be doing pretty well. As you know, or maybe you don't if you never listened before, I don't pay attention to any of that. I like to pepper my monologues with references to previous podcasts, act like people have listened, but I have no idea if they actually have. Why? Because when it comes right down to it, it really doesn't matter to me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think it'd be really cool if I had a group of loyal listeners. Downright amazing if I had paid sponsors so I could quit my job and do this full time. But that's not the core motivation for my podcast. What is? Well, for that I want to tell you the story. And yes, I know I did this 20-ish episodes ago, but fuck it, it's my podcast. Jesus, if I can't do what I want on my own podcast, what's the point? In 2009, I got laid off from work. You remember 2008 and 2009, right? Faltering economy, but the white knights of government gave us two stimulus packages. One under the outgoing President Bush, and the second by the brand new President Obama. Now, I didn't understand why the Republicans and President Bush would be in favor of the first stimulus, because it seemed to go against their stated beliefs in fiscal responsibility and limited government. I was personally against this stimulus package, but I chose, at that time, to trust the government that they could manage the situation. Hundreds of billions of dollars were doled out to businesses with the purpose, according to the heroes of government, to save and create jobs. Then administrations changed. President Obama and the Democrats said, basically, if the first one seemed to work, then let's do it again. And there was a second round of stimulus in early 2009, which the Republicans now strangely opposed. This is where I come in. The megacorporation I worked for at that time took $3 billion of that stimulus money designed to save and create jobs. They didn't even qualify for it at the beginning. They had to make changes to part of the company. I think it was a division in Utah or something that made the megacorp eligible to take this huge chunk of taxpayer dollars. They brought us into meetings to talk about how great it was. Again, things didn't make sense to me. The company was supposedly in good financial standing. Why did we need to take taxpayer dollars that could be beneficial elsewhere? But it was great. It was great publicity for the CEO having dinner with the new president. Oh yeah, there he was on the national news, walking out of the White House to his waiting limousine. Great. Great publicity, great money, great news that our company took $3 billion to, once again, save and create jobs. It wasn't great, a month later, for the 7,000 employees the megacorporation laid off. Or, 2 months after that, when another 4,000 were laid off, including me. For a total of 11,000 employees let go from a company that took taxpayer money designed to, say it with me, save and create jobs. This was not a sudden decision. You don't make quick decisions like that in a megacorporation. They knew at the time they accepted the $3 billion that they were planning on letting all those people go. That's why, to this day, I refuse to use American Express products. I was pretty rudderless until Gina and I got together. She made me want to be a better man. And I originally took that job with American Express and worked there for over a decade trying to better myself. I was literally an award-winning employee. My manager told me they changed the parameters of a quarterly production award because I had won it 8 times in a row. I wanted to do good at this job because it was my means of contributing to build a life for Gina and me. And to dig the knife a little deeper, just a few months before the layoffs, I finally got the promotion that I had worked on for years. I hadn't realized how much I made my job my identity until I lost it. And that was a huge mistake. Through no fault of my own, other than being on the wrong part of the depth chart at the wrong time, I was again rudderless. And I felt like a total failure. I still had the hubris, though, that I would quickly turn around to another job just like the one I had been promoted into before the layoffs. Yeah, a few months later, that arrogance was gone. Sure, I held the position, but not long enough for the companies I interviewed with. Looking back with 10 additional years of experience, I regret holding on to what was left of my pride. Eventually, I learned my lesson and took a seasonal job and proved to my new employer I was valuable enough to keep on permanently. Gina and I had prepared in case something bad happened, so while I was out of work, we barely touched our savings. But I was still nagged by what happened to me personally, by the actions of the politicians and the businessmen, and the reactions of the pundits and the citizenry. I was doing something none of them wanted me to do. I was questioning them. When I was not on the job hunt, I did my best to be a good house husband, so that Gina had to do as little as possible when she got home from work. I'd go to the grocery store on weekday mornings when hardly anyone else was there. While going through the store, I would listen to podcasts on my iPod Classic. Yeah, that was a gift I finally treated myself to for my promotion about a month before the layoffs. I got timing, it's just bad. One particular morning at the grocery store, as I grabbed a basket while plugging in my earphones, I dialed up an interview from the Dennis Miller Show, produced by Christian Blatt of the Blattcasts. Now, unfortunately, due to a dumbass operator error a while back, I lost all my old Dennis Miller interviews. I wish I still had it so I could get the exact words from that particular interview with Andrew Breitbart and Larry O'Connor. They were talking about the inception of the Breitbart website and how they wanted a place where they could just be themselves and cuss and have fun. And I heard that and I thought to myself, I like to be able to do that. And then I thought, why couldn't I? People were doing whatever the hell they wanted to on podcasts. Why not give it a try myself? I had a tech guru who offered to host my podcast, but the more we talked about it, the more we realized it just wouldn't work for him. So I signed up on GoDaddy, fumbled my way through recording and editing, and uploaded my first two podcasts on March 15th, 2010. My first was a short zero episode called The Ground Rules, outlining my idea, obviously. And the first full podcast, number one, titled Individual versus Collective. The entire reason for this podcast was a creative way for me to sort out my thoughts and my confusion over what I was seeing in the government and society. That's why the number of listeners really doesn't matter to me. This podcast is me trying to sort out my thoughts. This is my catharsis. I do a 30 to 35 minute podcast an average of once a month, and I make it public. Not because I care if anyone listens, but because I set it as a goal to make myself think about things. What I really believe in. Presented in some kind of order. So I never fall back into that just accept what they tell me mentality. A lot of the early podcasts kind of sucked. I mean, podcast number two was pretty awful. I've had some really lame ideas, like when I tried to do a series on the Libertarian Party platform. 10 years later, I've stuck with it. I think I've had some pretty clever episodes, and occasionally some brilliant lines. But what it all comes down to is, I do this for me. That's why I've been incorporating more pop culture into the podcast recently, because after 10 years, even I'm sick about thinking about sociopolitical issues. And I need to have a little fun with it. 10 years later, and what's changed? We hear from both parties how they are champions of your rights, but at the same time, actively try to take away rights, depending upon which fall in line with their morality. That hasn't changed. But 10 years ago, I was finally opening my eyes to what that really meant. Since I was no longer mindlessly accepting what was presented to me by my preferred media at the time, I started listening to and reading other ideas. What are rights? How can you claim something is a right if it means others have to sacrifice their earnings for you to get it? Rather than dismissing those fringe political parties, I stopped letting the media and pundits influence my thoughts and listened to alternate ideas and the Libertarian Party really caught my attention. They were no longer those crazy outsiders. The perception was flipped. And suddenly, I was seeing reason where I had been told was insanity. I looked back at the conservative ideology I had been part of and began to see a piece of the true mania. Remember how I mentioned that I didn't understand why the Republicans were in favor of the first stimulus package? I was never a member of the Republican Party, but more often than not, I voted for them in the elections. They talked a good game, fiscal responsibility and smaller government. So if they really cared about those things, why throw taxpayer dollars at a bunch of corporations that weren't smart enough to manage their financial situation? Furthermore, why were they suddenly dead set against the Obama administration doing exactly the same thing they had already done? I had started waking up, but losing my job was the shock my brain needed to rethink things. To stop simply accepting the narrative the government and media provided, all media, the right-wing media is just as myopic as the establishment media. The government handed out all this taxpayer money claiming to help, and I'm sure some people made out like bandits. But for at least 11,000 of us, it was a miserable failure. And I'll bet there are more stories like mine from that time. I've said it for years. I think I first said it in podcast number one, that no matter what form of government you have that purports to protect and save its citizens, some will always fall through the cracks. That's why you will always have homelessness, always have drug abuse, always have child abuse, because no matter what government tries to do, it will always fail some. I learned that because I was one it failed to save my job. Because government will always fail at least some people, you cannot take for granted that government will be there when you need them. I slept through that idea the first few decades of my life, but I became shockingly aware of it then. 10 years later, I'm listening to one side of the aisle promise yet again that they'll fix healthcare, give us all kinds of free shit, and turn this country into a socialist utopia. While people who come from countries that have made those promises and seen the true results are desperately trying to tell us not to believe it. They know the reality. I wonder how many will fall through the cracks when that ideology once again fails miserably here. I'm listening to the other side of the aisle, trying to calm the panic of a possible coronavirus outbreak, promising everything will be done to protect the public. Then I read how someone erroneously released a patient who tested positive for the virus and who then visited a mall half a mile from where I work and checked into a hotel where I sang karaoke a while back. Slipping through the cracks. Failing the citizens. That's why you cannot count on the government to help or protect you. By the way, no, I am not worried about the coronavirus. The only difference from this outbreak and the last coronavirus outbreak in 2013, you remember that one, don't you? Is that this one has managed to spread farther. We'll practice good health habits and self-quarantine if it comes to that. If my elderly mother got it, or someone with autoimmune difficulties, I would be concerned for them. But if you told me I just got a disease with a 98% survival rate, I'd fight it with great optimism. Anywho, my advice, take it or leave it, I don't care, is that you have to live your life on your terms as if no one will be coming to help you, especially government. You can't expect government to be there for you. And why should they? What are you to them? You're nothing more than a 9-digit number in their database. You're a statistic. You are a data collecting file on their servers. You're livestock. You matter to the government so long as you produce enough to feed their machine. So long as you're giving them taxes, you matter. So long as you continue to give them power with your vote and by conceding your natural rights, you matter. So long as you are sacrificing your life to their wars, you matter. Once you are no longer of use, they'll find a way to make you slip through the proverbial cracks. One night after karaoke a couple of years ago, the bar was closing up, but some of us were going out for a late night meal. A couple of guys were outside talking about their time in the military, how the experience messed them up mentally, and how they were so glad to be out and home to stay. They joked about the uselessness of the VA. At that point, I apologized for eavesdropping and asked them what they meant. They told me that no one in the government cares about them now that they're no longer willing to be cannon fodder. You go over there and you die, or you come back fucked up. But there are so many that the VA can't help everyone. The worst part was, they explained, was that the entire time over there, they didn't understand the purpose. No one could explain it to them, just that those were the orders to follow. These are the people that everyone always lifts up as the modern, heroic ideal. And this is how they're treated. This is how the heroes are viewed. How do you think they view schlubs like you and me? Government can't help everyone. And there's ample evidence to show it just doesn't care. 10 years later, and that point has become clearer and clearer to me. But government is just a reflection of our society, is it not? I talked recently about the pettiness and hatred between Trump and Pelosi at the State of the Union. That's a reflection of us. Set aside political ideology just for a moment and tell me, what do you think about how Trump and Pelosi act just as human beings? Personality-wise, these are two of the most self-righteous, spiteful, imperious, infuriating, condescending pieces of work the big political parties have regurgitated on the American people. You talk about politicians you want to sit down and have a beer with? I'd be loath to have to be in the same city with either of them. But why should anyone be at all surprised that these two take the spotlight in our politics when that self-righteous, spiteful, imperious, infuriating, condescending attitude is how we Americans treat each other for daring to have differing opinions? 10 years later, but one thing that hasn't changed in this podcast is this. I don't give a shit how you live your life. I don't care if you think socialism is a great idea. I don't. I don't care if you want to own a massive arsenal. I don't care if you want to do drugs. I don't care if you want to sell your body for sex. I don't care if you believe in Jesus, Allah, Yahweh, Krishna, Buddha, Odin, Ra, Chukwu, Akalpurak, Shangdi, Chunshin, Hypsitos, Cthulhu, or no gods at all. I don't care if you abstain from sex, dancing, electricity, alcohol, eating animals, or standing for national anthems. All I care about, and the only reason I will argue with you, stand against you, or even fight you, is if you try to force others to change their lives to fit your ideology. Unless they are violating your natural rights, you don't get to prevent anyone from living their life how they see fit. That includes voting for politicians and legislation that restricts people's natural rights. Imagine how much more peaceful this country would be if we stopped doing that to each other. Crowds once cheered at the notion of children of different races uniting together at the same table. Generations were once swayed at the beautiful idea that people ought to be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. Today, people look at your skin color and make automatic assumptions about you. You're white. You must hold those beliefs. You're black. You must hold these beliefs. You're Hispanic. You must hold those beliefs. And if you don't fit into their prejudiced idea of what you should believe based on your skin color, then you are a traitor to your kind. A sickening notion, isn't it? Your kind. As if the color of your skin must dictate your socio-political beliefs. Just a few generations after it seemed like we had an ideal to rally around, to shake off this foolish notion of skin color making a difference from one human to another, the same people who once claimed to champion it are now the ones promoting the segregation of people. Some going so far as to promote violence against those vile people of a different color. Look, this country has never been all that great at keeping its promises. Many of the same people who rallied behind the idea that all men are created equally didn't believe that people of certain skin colors qualified as men. But it was an ideal to strive for. We fought a war against ourselves that led to the freedom of savagely oppressed people. It was just the beginning, and there was still much more that needed to be done to truly prove the created equally part of the promise. We had been making progress. Then, while some were trying to secure that right, others decided to find a different way to force you to give up your labor to them. They made legal that which was once illegal, the taxation of personal income. That, my friends, that opened the doors to the tyranny we face today and the impending tyranny of full socialism. As soon as they made it okay for the government to stick its nose into our wallets, our purses, our bank accounts, we began the steady defeat of our personal rights and the steady rise of the intrusive government we have today. That took about a century. What will our nation look like in another 10 years? We could learn. We'd have to change our way of thinking. Collectivism, sacrifice of self, trading rights for safety. A majority of people would have to wake up to recognize these as ideological death traps. These are the antithesis of individual freedom, personal responsibility, and living your life on your terms. We'd have to have a majority of people understand that you can't just fight for the natural rights that are convenient to you, but all rights for all people all the time. We'd have to recognize that the hard work of individuality is better than the lazy selfishness of socialism. But Americans just keep looking for excuses to fight each other. Why? You think you have to fight me because my skin is a different shade from yours? Or because I like to have sex with both men and women? Or because I don't believe the definition of marriage must be limited to two people of opposite genders? Or because I'm okay with people taking whatever drug they want? Or because I think the only fair tax is 0%? Or because I think that there are better ways to promote patriotism than standing for a song? Or that DC is way better than Marvel? The biggest lesson I learned in the past 10 years, after waking from a conservative coma and began turning into the burly, surly, thick-skinned podcaster I am today, is that everyone has different experiences, life lessons, and environments that shape their opinions. I may think your ideology is ridiculous, but it's yours. So you be you. I'll be me. I'll talk to you and try to change your mind, and you're free to do the same. I may make light or bitch about your ideology, but let's please agree to quit forcing each other to change to fit our personal morality. 10 years later, and I do see much more clearly. Hopefully the next 10 will spread that clarity around. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.